and Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly are for, or did they change history? Good evening and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie and see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good. How about you? You had a good week?
Yeah, it's been all right.
Anything interesting you want to share?
No.
Okay, then let's move on straight to the emails. We have had an email from somebody called Craig in St. Albans. He's emailed the pod. Thanks, Craig, for your email. He said that he started listening to the pod from Hugo and has gone back and listened to all the other episodes. So thank you very much, Craig, for picking us up. That's really good. And then he sort of comes in with his question. His question is that he's noticed that quite a lot of the movies that we do are sequels. And we haven't been very kind to the sequels, or I guess in Star Wars' case, the prequels. And so Craig from St. Albans' question is, what in our view is the most unnecessary sequel of all time?
There's probably quite a few that just didn't need to be made. I think the problem with me is that there's a lot of remakes that didn't need to be made.
Yeah.
So I don't know about sequels. I would say Indiana Jones, but that's very on brand for us, I think. Do you know what? This is controversial, but I stand by my decision of this. Toy Story 4. Yeah. Toy Story 4 didn't need to be made, but I'm not saying that I hate it. But probably Toy Story 4, yeah. And then subsequently Toy Story 5 now as well.
Was there a Toy Story 5?
It's coming out. It's in the works, yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, I didn't know that. That does feel a bit unnecessary. I don't know. It's a really good question because some movies demand a sequel. So if you make, I don't know, The Lord of the Rings, then in the way that they made it, a sequel is demanded. So, and then, you know, but ultimately, if you make a really good film that's successful, aren't all sequels then, you know, unnecessary?
That's probably true, yeah.
I think the most unnecessary sequels of all time, I don't know if we certainly haven't seen these together, but I think it's probably the Jaws movies.
Right. I have not actually even seen the first one to know, but that's interesting, yeah. I can see that making sense.
Definitely worth watching. Jaws is a great film, really good film, definitely worth watching. Jaws 2, 3, 4, absolutely unnecessary. There you go. That's my answer to Craig's question. So yours was, remind me?
Toy Story 4.
Definitely. And mine was anything after the original Jaws. So thanks, Craig. That's what we think are the most unnecessary sequels of all time. When we finish this podcast, or at least finish watching all the movies on our massive list of films, maybe there'll be a few more, but that's a really, really good question. It caught us out a little bit. Even though I'd seen the question before, I hadn't really formed an answer. So thanks very much. Do keep the emails coming in at the Benefit of Hindsight podcast at gmail.com. And our number one fan, Josie's been back in touch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she tells us that we inspired her to go and watch Superman Returns because she hadn't seen it before. And that she really enjoyed it.
That's cool.
So thanks, Josie. She's our number one fan. She's going to get the T-shirt and the mug at the end of at the end of this season. So thanks, Josie. Right, so we decided that we were going to watch Wallace and Gromit: The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, 2005 Steve Box and Nick Park classic, and we gave it a memory score. Sam, what was your memory score for the movie?
Mine was a solid 10 out of 10.
And mine was also a solid 10 out of 10. And normally at this point, I would ask you the question, has your score changed? But I'm going to ask you a different question this time. So for the benefit of our listeners, a couple of nights ago, you sent me the following message and you haven't revealed what you meant by it yet. So maybe this is a good way in. You said, I got 10 minutes into Curse of the Were-Rabbit and I'm so desperately frustrated by it that I'm finding it very hard to watch. Which I found was perfectly staggering, because, you know, I knew how much you loved it based on your score of 10. So I wonder if you could tell us why you were struggling and finding it desperately difficult to watch. Put me out of my misery.
Yeah, it's interesting. This could turn into a rant. And I'm going to answer your question firstly with a question of my own.
Okay.
And this is very important. How did you watch the film?
I watched it. I streamed it. Yeah, I watched it perfectly legally. I streamed it legally, yeah.
Okay, so you might have had the same experience as me and possibly not noticed.
Go on.
I should preface that the issue that I have and I've mentioned to you isn't necessarily an issue about the film. And I don't want to offend any particular part of our audience, but for some reason, the version of the film that I watched came from YouTube, perfectly legally. I paid for it, which means it's the American version of Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Okay.
And unfortunately, the thing that really annoyed me is that they've changed the word marrow to melon.
Yeah, I knew that.
Did you know that going into it this time around, or just the whole time?
It's not the version that I saw. The version that I saw referenced marrow, but I did know that they changed it for an American audience to melon because they don't have marrows in the US.
See, I didn't know it, and it completely ruined the whole experience of the movie for me, because I thought I heard melon, and I was like, that can't be right. So I checked the subtitles, and no, it does say melon. And I just don't understand. This is the rant. I don't understand why they bothered to change it. The film is a British film. It's set in Yorkshire. And it's all about, I would say, British culture and that kind of thing. All the characters are British. Why change one word of it? And why change it to something that doesn't make sense? Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like a... It barely looks like a melon.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't... It doesn't add to the plot if you change it. It doesn't take away from the plot if you change it. And it's clearly a marrow, not a melon. And the word marrow in the original cut is said twice in the whole movie. And do you want to know the worst part?
Go on.
I got to the end of the movie and I knew Lady Tottenden said marrow and I was cringing, waiting for it to say melon. She didn't. She said marrow. So why change the first one in the first place?
Right.
And it ruined the entire movie for me that they just changed it to melon.
Wow.
That might be the rant.
I think it's a very, very good rant. And I was going to come to this later, but as you've ranted on it now, I'll jump in a little bit earlier. So the movie cost £30 million to make, and it grossed £192 million around the world. But apparently had disappointing DVD sales. But during the production of the movie, Nick Park stated publicly that he was having difficulty working with DreamWorks because they kept giving him notes and demands to make it more popular to American children. And
I did know that there was problems with DreamWorks, but I didn't know it was that specific.
Yeah, and they were desperate for him to not cast Peter Sallis as Wallace. They wanted a different voice, an American actor, and they kept giving him note after note after note, which he kept resisting and resisting and resisting. And so ultimately that relationship came to an end, and Nick Park said, "We're done. I don't want to make any more films with DreamWorks." Flushed Away had been a disappointment. This had been a disappointment after the enormous success of Chicken Run and two movies we're probably going to come back to. But they walked away from the deal, and the film was not successful in the United States of America. It just didn't make any money. It was very popular, but it made very little money. In fact, okay, so in the United States of America, in its second weekend, It was number two behind The Fog, and ultimately only made $56 million in the States and was considered by DreamWorks a bit of a flop. So your rant is perfectly appropriate. It's a British movie that the Americans, who we love very much, didn't just seem to get.
I think it flopped because they changed it to melon, to be honest.
I think you're probably right. It's clearly a marrow and not a melon. And
it explodes at the end of the film and it doesn't look anything like a melon.
If they'd called it a courgette or a zucchini, if you prefer, at least then it makes sense because it's huge. It's a giant thing. But yeah, I think it's really interesting that.
Also, why would Gromit, a pretty smart dog, be entering a fruit into a vegetable competition, please?
You've overthought that. No, I'm joking. That's you're right.
I haven't overthought it. I'm the only one who's actually thought it through.
You haven't. Yeah, all of us have underthought it, and you've spotted the major flaw: a fruit and a vegetable competition that's clearly a marrow, and when it explodes, it's green, and then when it wins or doesn't win, it's announced as a marrow anyway. So, talk me through watching this beloved film of yours as an adult. What was different this time around?
The fact that they changed marrow to melon. I'm not going to drop it.
No, and fair enough. And so thanks very much for listening. No, that's, we have to. Did you see it differently as an adult? Was there anything different that you noticed?
I think for me, the catch with this is, I've given it such a high score, and it was a case of, can it really do anything wrong if I've already given it a high score? This time around, I kind of enjoyed watching it in a way that wasn't too, well, watching it for a podcast for a review, but I did keep an eye out for things that would change my opinion. And I think Aardman Films, and especially Wallace and Gromit, it's one of those films, or like one of those companies where you always look in the background for little hidden jokes and things like that. And especially as a kid, a lot of jokes went over my head. So being an adult, it's quite funny to enjoy it in that respect too. But I did enjoy it this time around, and I did notice different things. I'm going to jump to you before I give away my score.
Well, I mean, it was kind of a different experience for me because, and we're using these in the loosest possible way, these terms, but I was an adult when I watched it with you. So, you know, and we're using the term adult in the loosest possible terms. So some of the kind of in jokes that were there, I kind of got. I mean, the obvious one you probably got as a kid as well. The obvious one is the box may contain nuts. It's quite funny. Okay. But there is more subtle ones. There's a bottle of sauce on the table, which is described as mummies. And of course, if you're from the UK, you know, daddies is a popular sauce in UK. There was the Bright Eyes joke, which was when he switches the radio on. Bright Eyes is a movie about rabbits. There's all the stuff that's in the book as well. He opens the book and they're looking at the monsters in the book, yeah? And there's all those...
That was the first time I kind of noticed those, yeah.
And so I they were funny as well. I can't remember what they were called, but I think the Loch Ness Monster's Latin name is Taurus Ripiophius or something like that. So it's... Yeah. Some funny jokes and there. So I had kind of seen them before. But yeah, I take your point. You are going to notice those things a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I do have another question for you, which is, do you think it is a kids' film, though?
No, not really. I think there's elements of it that are a kids' film. And I think with films like this, which are sort of on the surface look like they're for kids, it depends on who you get making them, because I think adults making films for kids know that they're going to get an adult audience. So they do have to put little adult kind of jokes in and little references and things like that that the kids aren't going to pick up. So I think on the surface, I would say yes, it does look like a kids film going straight into it. But I think it's Wallace and Gromit. It's one of those things that's sort of ageless, and any sort of age group or generation can sit and enjoy it. And I think that's one of the better things about it for me, especially, is just I'm never going to get bored of it, even though I've seen them over 100 times, because every time I see them, I'm slightly older, I've got slightly different knowledge, and it's just enjoyable. So, yeah, that's my answer to that question.
I don't really go in for kind of the movie trivia thing, but as I paused the scene and wrote some stuff down, okay? And the bit that I paused, so forgive me for this, the bit that I paused was Wallace Bookshelf. Okay, so let me just go through some of the titles of books on Wallace Bookshelf. How Green Was My Cheese? Brie encounter, Swiss cheese family Robinson, East of Edam, and a couple more. But my absolute favourite was Grated Expectations.
Nice.
This made me laugh. And the only other thing, we could do this all day, but the only other thing that I wanted to reference as a really good in-joke was the vegetable shop that's attacked. There's a shop that's attacked, the vegetable shop. It's called Harvey's. And I wondered if that was a reference. I'm sure it is a reference to, I don't know if you know the famous film with James Stewart called Harvey. I don't know if you know this film. It's called.
I don't think so. No.
So you should definitely watch it. It's James Stewart from the 1950s, and he's a character, and he can see a 6-foot-tall rabbit called Harvey that nobody else can see. So I just thought that was a good in joke as well. So another little rabbit joke in there. So yeah, all the in jokes and stuff were great. We always talk.
Another shop next to that one was called Rare Bits, which is quite funny.
Yeah. You could do a whole podcast, I think, dedicated to in jokes from Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. And it's similar theme, but moving on, it was all the other kind of references to other movies in that movie. So, for example, at the end, when they're doing the plane thing, there's a little bit of it. This is essentially just King Kong, right?
Yeah, I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah. What about the, we always talk about plot. So, and it does feel a bit harsh to talk about a Wallace and Gromit movie in terms of the quality of its plot. But did you have anything you want to say about the plot of the movie?
I think the plot works quite well. With Wallace and Gromit, it's always been shorts that are no longer than half an hour, really. And I think the transition from shorts to feature length worked quite well. So I think the plot worked quite well as a longer form sort of thing. Like, it didn't have any gaps in it where you thought, well, this is getting a bit slow now, or this is getting boring. It all just flowed quite well and made a lot of sense to me. And I think you can get lost in a plot like that, but for this, it keeps you entertained throughout. And I don't know if that's just because of the comedy or the way it's written, but I think it works quite well.
I think it's a great script. I mean, we've often talked about scripts on this pod, and some scripts are better than others. That was a great script. We talked about the details. I think the dialogue's really good. It's really funny. Peter Salas, I think, is just, you know, Peter Salas. What a guy.
Yeah, I think he's just always been Wallace for me. And just the way he delivers the line, you can tell that he actually cares about the character, which I think is saying a lot for just a character made of plasticine. But you can really feel it in his voice when he does the lines and delivers the lines. It works really well.
I don't know if you know the answer to this question, and it's on topic but off topic all at the same time, because there is a new Wallace and Gromit outcoming this year, isn't there? And I did ask the internet, but I couldn't get any information on it whatsoever, other than the fact that it's coming out in 2024. So there's a new movie coming out. Have they used a different actor to do the Peter Salas voice, or have they reused Peter Salas and just sort of chopped it up a bit?
So I think they've probably got a different actor, and this is an interesting thing. A couple of years ago, I went to a live performance of The Wrong Trousers, and by which I mean the orchestra was live, which was quite cool. And they had a little segment beforehand in the lead up to it, which was shown different music throughout the ages and the years, and they'd made a sort of Wallace and Gromit short based around it. And the voice actor that they got to do Wallace's lines for that, you knew it wasn't Peter Salas, but as a substitute and as a long-term fan saying this, it was perfectly fine, and I would be happy. I mean, it's always going to be sad about Peter Salas, but I would be happy to see Wallace continue with a really good impression who understands the character and loves the character just as much as any fan would. So I think they've probably got someone. It would be a pretty rigorous casting thing, I think, to get the right voice. But I think they'll know what they're doing, and they'll have someone good. Because I would kind of hope in today's age that they don't just use AI or computer to make the voice, because that would just seem a bit uncomfortable now. But yeah, that's my opinion.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I think you're right about the don't use AI. It would be perfectly possible just to chop it up and make it work, but no, I think Good to get another actor. I have a Peter Salis fun fact. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, let's see if I don't already know it.
Let's see if you know. So Peter Salis, who appeared in The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, also appeared in a movie in 1961, The Curse of the Werewolf.
I did know that, but I only learnt that today because I looked at the trivia.
I also liked the other characters that kind of make up the supporting cast in the movie. Okay, I mean, they are all caricatures of different things. You know, the kind of the vicar, the Quatermain, and all of that. They're kind of caricature villain and whatever. But actually, I really enjoyed how well written they were for this movie. You know, they were believable. They were believable within the context of the movie. Quatermain and his wig, and the vicar and his drama, and then. All the sort of little characters that appear in and out of the plot all did so very well. There was nothing in there that you felt was just a joke. It, all of those characters are contributing something to the storyline, which I liked very much.
Absolutely, yeah. I think you can get lost with side characters who just don't really serve a purpose. But I think everyone served their purpose quite well, and also was a nice bit of comedy every now and then, so I think that worked too.
Yeah, nobody was being... So there's no comic relief, as it were. There's nobody that's in it just to provide a joke. They're all servicing the story. And I think that's a sign of a really good script. And it does feel a little bit disingenuous if we talk about a really good script in a Wallace and Gromit movie, but actually it really was a good script. But everything they're doing in the story or in the movie is driving the story forward. They're not just being used for comic relief and then they disappear out of it. I guess the only character that might be the comic relief, again, even this character is making a contribution, is the other dog. Quatermain's dog is often used for comic relief, I think, especially with the little bit with the purse and the 10p piece and the plane at the end. I love that bit.
That's an interesting bit for me. I've always really liked that bit. But to my knowledge, I'd found out this surprisingly recently within the last year, which is sad for me saying I'm a diehard Aardman fan. I knew there was a hidden Feathers McGraw around that scene, because Feathers McGraw is hidden in all of the Aardman films. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know
that. So I had to keep an eye out. I had to keep an eye out on where he is in this one. And I actually found him.
Wow, where is he?
The first time ever.
Wow, where is he? Because I didn't know that. And B, I really want to know where he is now.
So I made a note of the timestamp so I can get it completely right too. It's the scene, it's just after that scene with the purse, or not long after that scene with the purse, where Wallace as the were-rabbit is on the flagpole and Quatermain goes to shoot him, and then Gromit flies in and gets the bullet. Feathers is on the roof inside one of the roof ornaments, and he's just hidden, because I was always looking out for his little hat. But he's not wearing the hat, so it just looks like a penguin, but it's so well hidden. So it's at 1 hour, 12 minutes and 36 seconds is when you can see him, and he's just off to the right.
There you go. There you go, podcast listeners. 1 hour, 12 minutes and 36 seconds for Hidden Feathers McGraw. That is a proper podcast piece of information right there. I really like
it
that.
I mean, it ruins it if you want to go and find him yourself, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it's easy. Now you know where to look. It's definitely better. So I always ask you the question. I suspect you know the answer to this one. How many Oscars was it nominated for, and how many did it win?
Wallace and Gromit has a history of having a lot of Oscars, I'm sure.
It does.
So I'm going to guess that it was nominated for 5, maybe.
Okay.
And won at least 3.
Okay. Well, you're going to be disappointed then. It was nominated for 1. Which was Best Animated Feature Film. And...
Oh, this is right, actually. I think I know this.
And it won. It was the...
Yeah.
And until, I think, quite recently, actually, I think it was Pinocchio, not that long ago, it was the only stop-motion animation movie to have won that Oscar. So well done them. Let's go through some other awards. So in the what are called the Annie Awards, which are the awards for animation, it won 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of those, 12 Annie Awards. In the British Academy Film Awards, the BAFTA Awards, it won Best British Film. It won the Critics' Choice Award for Best Animated Feature. It won the Los Angeles Film Critics Award for Best Feature. Best Sound Editing it won at the Sound Editors Golden Reel Award. It won loads and loads and loads of awards. It won the Producers Guild of America Awards for the Best Producer. And it won, I mean, I can't count, but 30, 40 awards easily across the world. So it was not, surprisingly, I didn't know this until recently, it was not a commercial success. But critically, it was acclaimed, as they say.
I think it also won the Best Representation of a Marrow competition, but didn't win the Best Representation of a Melon competition, because it's not a melon.
Yeah.
It's a marrow.
I was going to come along to that, actually. That was one of the awards that it won. Do you know when Empire Magazine released their list of the 100 best British films? Where was this movie in it? What number? It was in the list. Where was it in the top 100? By the way, this is the best British films of all time ever, according to Empire Magazine.
I want it to be in a really good position. So I'm going to say at least in the 20s somewhere.
You'll be disappointed. I did slightly oversell it. Number 50.
Oh, no.
Number 51.
I almost said 50. But I wanted it to be higher.
That's good, right? Lower. That's good, right? And other things about this movie, and again, we don't normally go into this level of detail, but it is worth doing because it wasn't commercially successful. They ended their relationship with DreamWorks, and yet the film has become acclaimed. It's one of only 20 films, apparently, to have an approval rating of plus 95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow, that's quite good. I don't know if I'll be attempting to jog your memory here, but I have, and with a podcast where it's kind of about our memories of it and things like that, I have quite a few fond memories about this, especially looking back. I mentioned it at the end of the last podcast where I said that I had the Curse of the Were-Rabbit curtains.
Yeah.
And I have a really funny memory of those things. So you'd come home from work one day before the film had come out, and I don't know where you'd heard it, but you said to me, "Sam, Wallace is the were-rabbit." And I went to bed that night looking at my curtains and was like, "Wallace, how could you possibly betray us all?" Because I thought it was so interesting of a character choice that I just have a fond memory of that moment. And I think every time I think about those curtains, I'm reminded of that. But looking back, it's so funny because obviously it's just a character. And it also wasn't Wallace's fault in the end.
No, it wasn't. And we hadn't seen the film at that point. So how did I know and you didn't?
I've got no idea. You must have read it in like a magazine somewhere, or maybe even a newspaper, because I don't think it would have been like widely on the internet back then.
Slightly,
it's quite funny.
Slightly off topic again, but on topic based on what you said. I think it's really funny that you remember things like that. And like, I've got no memory of that whatsoever. I just, and yet that's kind of an important memory, at least in the context of Wallace and Gromit in your life. I've got no memory of mentioning that whatsoever. Fascinating.
It's quite funny though, because I don't think, I just said jog your memory and just shared a memory that was only for me. But the other thing was, I don't know how much you remember of like the games and the toys back then of it all.
Oh, loads. Yeah.
Because do you remember that I had the like a remote controlled version of the little van and I would just drive it around everywhere?
I do remember that. I was going to mention all the toys you had. I mean, I don't think we can emphasize to our listeners that you were, and I think still are, a massive Aardman fan, right? In fact, I'd probably go as far to say that Aardman is responsible for your love of film.
I would agree with that completely, okay?
Because
definitely.
As we've said before on this podcast, the first time you and I ever went to the movies together was to watch Wallace and Gromit. And you were essentially a baby. So, and I, that's stuck with me. But you had everything. You had, you know, the Wallace toys, Gromit toys, the car, the curtains, and you had the lot. It was a big, big deal for you. I do remember Christmas 2005 just being basically everything Wallace and Gromit. And there was also a, I don't know, let's see if I can jog your memory on a thing. There was a real difficulty in getting Wallace and Gromit toys because people all wanted them. They were selling out. And I was at work and there had been some kind of fate or something like this at the where I was working, like a winter fair or something. And there was a crocheted Wallace, and I ended up paying a fortune for the crocheted Wallace. And yeah, because we couldn't get your Wallace toy, okay? And then we did get your Wallace toy, and I never gave you the crocheted Wallace. I think it just lived at work forever.
I was going to say, I didn't remember that. That's interesting, actually, yeah.
Because I sort of bought you the... Wow. It wasn't very good, right? It was basically... It was meant to be Wallace, looked a bit like Wallace, like if Wallace had melted. And but because I couldn't find you a Wallace toy, I bought this kind of crocheted homemade thing, and then regretted it immediately because I'd spent a fortune on it. And then and I think was ultimately too embarrassed to give it to you. And when I was leaving that particular place of work and moving on somewhere else, and I was going emptying my cupboard, I found it. And so there you go. There's a little bit of anecdote that you've never heard before.
I would have loved it. It wouldn't have mattered to me.
I know.
Never mind.
I haven't really thought of that. I hadn't planned to say any of that. And I hadn't really thought about that for, it's now nearly 20 years. And as I was telling you the story, I immediately regretted not giving it to you anyway. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry you didn't get the melted, not very good Wallace crochet toy.
That's fine. I got loads of stuff anyway.
And as you revealed last week, you still have the original DVD.
I do, yeah. And I wish I'd watched it instead of getting the melon version of the film. But never mind. We live and we learn.
What was the melon thing again? I don't know what you mean.
I don't know if I've mentioned it, actually. They changed marrow to melon for some reason.
Wow. Do you think that's for the American audience where marrows don't exist?
No comment.
Could have called it a courgette.
And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Are you tired of the same old boring cheese flavours? Looking for something that will make your taste buds jump with joy? Look no further. Introducing the all-new mouth-watering carrot-flavoured cheese, brought to you by Willis and Grimble.
Grimble, me lad. Have you ever wondered what would happen if we combined the goodness of carrots with delicious cheese?
Grimble nods.
Well, wonder no more. We've created a cheese that will make your taste buds dance with delight. It's carrot-flavoured cheese, Grimble.
Grimble raises an eyebrow.
Oh yes, Grimble. This cheese is made with the finest carrots, carefully blended with our secret cheese recipe. It's a match made in cheese heaven.
But don't just take our word for it. Listen to what our satisfied customers have to say.
Wow, this carrot-flavoured cheese is a game-changer. It's like having a delicious carrot cake and cheese platter all in one.
I never thought carrots and cheese could go well together, but Willis and Grimble have proven me wrong. This cheese is simply irresistible.
So whether you're a cheese lover or a carrot enthusiast, our carrot-flavoured cheese is the perfect blend of flavours for you.
Grimble nods and smiles.
And remember, folks, when it comes to cheese, we're the experts. So hop on over to your nearest store and grab a block of our carrot-flavoured cheese today.
Willis and Grimble's carrot-flavoured cheese. It's cheesy goodness with a carrot twist. Get yours now. And coming soon, marrow-flavoured cheese. Not melon-flavoured.
Cheesy carrots, Grimble. What a cracking combination.
Grimble smiles and nods.
So regular listeners to our podcast will know that Sam has an out-of-pocket take. Sam, what is your Wallace and Gromit out-of-pocket take for the week?
So the bit of trivia that I got for this one, I got two, and I keep saying that I got two, or got more than one, but never mind. In this particular film, Gromit rolls his eyes 13 times, and it's usually because of Wallace.
Wow, I like that.
I just thought that was interesting, yeah. And the other one, which was a bit of a surprise, is that this was the last DreamWorks animation film to be released on VHS, which is interesting because earlier on you said that the DVD sales weren't great. And I wonder if it had something to do with that.
Well, that might be right, yeah. Yeah, that would be just about the time of crossover from VHS to DVD. You might be right.
Which I honestly didn't think that was in my lifetime, but apparently it was.
Getting old. Do you remember the crossover from DVD to Blu-ray?
I do, because I remember it was properly going to take off and it still never did. Or as much as it thought.
Yeah, I think it kind of morphed into streaming, I guess, didn't it? I don't think anybody really predicted that. They didn't predict streaming, did they?
No, and I think nowadays as well, my collection's mostly digital. So, yeah.
Is this the best Wallace and Gromit movie?
Oh, now you're asking a tough question.
You could save your answer because we are going to do the other Wallace and Gromit movies as well, right?
Yeah, okay. I think that's a good idea to just get them all
and
in
maybe
before.
Maybe kind of do them as little mini-sodes or something like that. But I did want to sort of put you on the spot with that question. Is this the best one? We always talk about CGI because I guess we were watching films at a particular time and you're a particular age. And this is stop motion animation for the most part. But am I right in thinking there is some CGI in it?
There's a few little shots, yeah. It's obviously not used quite heavily, but every now and then there's a shot of something being CGI. I think one of the first ones that you come across is the beginning of the movie where they're doing the sort of intro to how Antipesto works and all the contraptions, and when they do the sort of cheers with their mugs and the liquid inside of the mug switches, it's a really jarring shot because you can tell it's like set up for CGI. But there's a few like that. One of the bits of CGI that I do actually really like in it, that I think is used quite well, is when Wallace transforms back into himself from the were-rabbit and the sort of rings around him disappear. And I think that worked really well to sort of sell the sci-fi side of it, the bit of fantasy. But yeah. But apart from that, there's no real noticeable CGI.
No, I didn't think so either. I did know there was some in it, but if you look at like the statistics, and it would be, of course we have to say this, I think it would take a day to make 3 seconds of completed film. And so just imagine the time and effort that went into making it. Is there anything in the movie that didn't quite land for you? Is there any part of it where you kind of, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you kind of go, oh, I'm not sure?
Do you know what? I don't think so. I think if I had to say one thing, it could be the fact that it is benefit of hindsight kind of thing, with the 24-karat gold joke being the bullet.
Yeah.
And I think it is a bit on the nose for that bit. Apparently they did change it from being a silver bullet
right.
on purpose, but I don't know, I feel like later on that over multiple watches and multiple viewings, it gets a bit stale, that joke, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit sort of, that if that's the only criticism you can find in the movie, though,
pretty much, yeah.
I this is not a negative, and like you, if you have to find something that doesn't quite land for me, I've got quite a controversial one, and it's the character Hutch. I kind of get why it's there. I understand the joke's quite funny, and I you know, it's Peter Sallis' voice just pitch shift up and things like that. So I get it. I completely get it. But if you take Hutch out of the movie, it's still the same movie.
It's interesting that we haven't brought up Hutch yet, but I think I disagree with that point.
Let's hear it.
He has to be there as the sort of alternative to Wallace in the moment of going, oh dear, Wallace can no longer build stuff, he is turning into a rabbit, how do we fix this problem? And then here's Hutch. Although now that I think about it, he doesn't actually build the machine again. But he does assist Gromit quite a lot in sort of solving the Wallace yeah. situation. So he kind of does still have
okay.
a point to me.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that. I had forgotten that, I think, but now you mention it, it's pretty obvious, yeah.
I'll defend this film the end of my life.
And so would I. It just felt like that Hutch was, just kind of like put in for the kiddies because he's cute and rabbity and says funny things.
See, I thought your comic relief comment about the character was going to be for Hutch, but then I thought, oh, wait, he does actually have a purpose. So it is interesting that that's kind of come up anyway.
That's very true. Hutch, I guess, is providing the comic relief, yeah. We haven't talked about Gromit, which is interesting, and I wonder if it's because it doesn't say anything, but there must be something we can say about Gromit, because for every ounce that Wallace is the legendary Wallace, Gromit is the equally legendary Gromit. So what do you make of Gromit?
I don't think I have a lot to say about him, because Gromit to me has always been as equal as Wallace in terms of main character, and I think he's always kind of come across as a bit of the action hero of the series, so he's always there to save the day in the end if something goes horribly wrong. So I've always just appreciated that side of Gromit and how he is just completely useful. He's not, it comes across that he's the sidekick, but he's really not. He does all the helping, even in the shorts. He's there to help and he's there to support. And he'll always, it's the classic man's best friend kind of situation. And he really is. That's just what it is at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's true. And I also think you're action hero, definitely. Okay, because he's always the one, you know, on the train or the aeroplane or anything else. I also think, and this is maybe a bit too deep and unnecessary, but I also think he represents us. His little knowing glances to us, his rolling of the eyes when Wallace says something, we're all thinking that. So he's kind of an everyman character. He's us, and occasionally given to sort of heroism, and you know, book reading and things. I think Gromit's brilliant. I think there's no Wallace without Gromit. There's no Gromit without Wallace. And it's obviously they're a pair. Of course they're a pair. But is it the best movie duo of all time? Because to say yes, you'd have to think of a better one.
I mean, would you argue Han Solo and Chewbacca? Maybe.
But I'm gonna say I wouldn't. But I'd definitely put those on it. But I'd definitely put them on the level. I mean, you're dead right. That's a really good one. That's a really good. That is one where you can say that, you know, that's an iconic movie couple, and they're the same, right?
Yeah, I think that's the only one I could quickly think of off the top of my head, which also says something, really.
Yeah. What about the soundtrack, which we haven't discussed? No John Williams this week, unfortunately. But what did you make of the soundtrack?
This is one of my favourite soundtracks of all time. I think I grew up with it, basically. So I would always kind of... It's always the song that's in the back of my head. And not just the main theme, but like all of it. So I've always been a really big fan of it. And I think it works so perfectly as an adaptation of the themes that we've already heard before, as well as keeping it sort of interesting and entertaining. And it goes along, it matches the tone of the film really well and the pacing of the film really well. And it goes really hand in hand with the dialogue and the action and all of that. So I've always been a big fan of it. One of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't add anything to that. It's true. It's a great soundtrack to a really, really good film. So, is there anything else you want to say about the Curse of the Were-Rabbit that we haven't yet said, or shall we move on to the scores?
Yeah, did you know that they changed it to melon instead of marrow?
I did not know that. Was that changed for an American audience?
Probably, yeah. I just wanted to make a note of that and just get it in there before we end, yeah.
Okay, excellent. So then, has your score changed? You gave it 10, I gave it 10. We've gone away. We've rewatched it. What is your score? Do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
I don't know. Do you want to go first? I'll let you go first.
I'll go first. I gave it a 10 from memory because my memory of the film was you and I watched it together on countless occasions. As we've talked about in this podcast, it was a big deal for you, all the merchandise, all the toys. I'm part of that, you know, I'm giving you this stuff, and you know that it's in our collective memory as a father and son who watch films together. It feels quite an important one. That's my preamble into why I gave it 10 for my memory score. So then you go and when you rewatch the movie again and you think, well, what am I going to do, because maybe it's not a 10. And we don't do halves, but based on what we've said today and based on the obvious affection we both have for it, I think I'm going to stick with 10. I think I'm going to say 10, but I want to qualify that, but I'll qualify it after you've given your score. So the audience have somebody else to listen to for a few seconds.
As you've kind of already said, more or less what I wanted to say, this film has always been important to me. It's always been important to us. I've always really enjoyed it, even after multiple millions of views, I've still enjoyed it. I think it's funny. I think it's got a great cast. It's got a great script. I'm still noticing brand new things as I go with every watch, and I'm still welcoming the things that I already know because I enjoy it that much. So for me, my score is also going to stay as a 10 out of 10.
Excellent.
Excluding the whole melon marrow situation.
Yeah. Are you? And if you'd watched the American version, it would surely be a 1, right?
Yeah. No, I don't even an issue that big can't fault it enough for me.
I did say I wanted to qualify my 10, so I'll try and do it as quick as I possibly can, because there are probably out there people screaming, saying, you know, you gave Star Wars a 3 and this a 5 and whatever, and you've given Wallace and Gromit 10. But in terms of what it is, what it does, I think it's a 10. All day long, it's a 10. So we always do the one-word review. What's your one-word review of the movie?
My one-word review is wholesome.
Okay, wholesome. That's a good one.
What's your one word?
Wholesome. No, that was yours. My one word review of the movie, Curse of the Were-Rabbit, Wallace and Gromit, because of what it is perfect. Because I can't find a fault with it. I just can't. So it's 10 out of 10. And maybe there'll be people screaming at us for this. And I suspect the emails will explode, you know, from our listener all around the world. But there you go. So, okay, we have to then go on to the next movie. Now, before we do this, what we normally do is we have a brief discussion before about what movie we're going to watch next, literally just before recording the pod. And Sam said, no, let's not do that. Just drop this one on me this week. So I've been given the responsibility of choosing the movie. But actually, I think we should do this next week where you're responsible for choosing the movie.
Okay, I was going to suggest that, yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so my choice for next week's podcast, I'm going to give you a little bit of a gift here, I hope, is the 2002 classic Spider-Man by Sam Raimi.
Okay. I don't even have to watch it. I know it off by heart.
Because I think, no, I will watch I think it. We can do two favorite films in a row. But I just chose that one because I know how much you revered that movie too. It'd be interesting to see how that compares. So what is your memory, very briefly, of the 2002 Sam Raimi classic, Spider-Man?
It's a classic, as you said, yeah. And I enjoyed it as a kid. Paved the way for who I am today, I suppose. And I still enjoy it to this day. But that being said, I think I'm not going to give it a perfect 10. I feel like that defeats the object. But I think for this one, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man from 2002, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow. Okay, it's very interesting. My memory of this movie is, I've got lots of memories of this movie. Again, they're all relative to you. First of all, it was the first movie that I can remember that had a 12A rating. And so I was sent to the cinema on my own to watch it to make sure that it was suitable for you. Which it was always going to be suitable for you. And there was no way I was going to come home and say, oh, sorry, Sam, you can't. You know, so I sat and watched it without you, and then we went and watched it together, and it was perfectly appropriate for a 5-year-old. I'm sticking with that. It was. And my other memory of this movie is that you then went out and bought a Spider-Man suit and learned how to climb up the door frames.
Yeah, that wasn't CGI. I can just do that.
You can just do that, and there's photographic evidence to prove it. In terms of its score, well, you have seen this movie a lot more than I have. I've only revisited it a couple of times since 2002, and they were probably with you anyway. But my memory of it was, I think, probably the movie that started the trend of superhero movies that's continued really for the last 20 odd years. I'm going to go in with you. I'm going to go with an 8. I think it's an important movie, predating all the Marvel stuff. And I remember it being very good. So I'm going to go with an 8 for that as well.
Yeah, I think historically it is quite a big first step as well for that kind of genre.
So we've given overall benefit of hindsight score of, or memory score rather, of 8. I should say at this point as well that when we do our scores, we aggregate them, we work out the average. And Wallace and Gromit is the first movie that we've given a perfect 10 to. We didn't say that at the time. Well, I think that just about wraps up that movie chat. I've enjoyed it as I always do. Do you want to remind our listeners of the Twitter that they can get us on?
Our Twitter is at TBO Hindsight Pod, and that is the Benefit of Hindsight podcast. We want you to send us a tweet saying if you're hashtag Team Melon or hashtag Team Marrow. It better be Team Marrow.
Absolutely. Yeah, but you never know, you know, especially on Twitter. Or you can email us if you prefer, whether you're Team Melon or Team Marrow, the Benefit Findsight podcast at gmail.com. And thank you to all those people who are listening and downloading our podcast. I think I probably said this last week. We weren't expecting to make a big splash. And let's be honest, we haven't. But there's definitely quite a few people out there downloading and listening to this and getting in touch. Can't tell you how happy we are about that. And we'll keep going on our podcast until we run out of movies. So that's time to say goodbye. So as always, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me too.
Team Melon.
Team Marrow. I'm just going to cut every single time you said Team Melon out because it's not fair. Actually, what I'll do is, if you say Marrow really quick.
Marrow.
Every time you say Melon, I'm going to edit that word in. That's a lot of editing, actually. Bye.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?